Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is more of a multi-point update on terminology. With so many words and labels being in flux, we thought it might be worth taking a moment to give the official guidance from the 15th International Conclave on Linguistic Virtue, as they've made some recent pronouncements on matters of faith, morals, and vocabulary. First, we've decided to honor the unbranding reversion of Max to its former title of HBO Max. Generally speaking, we don't like to see old names brought forth again because it creates the idea that dead names can be resurrected and then we have to deal with the possibility of undead naming things, which is bad. But since generally speaking, name changes are so vital to fostering a deep and anxious uncertainty about what to call anything, that the Conclave has allowed this particular reversion. Besides, if we can't call it Skinemax, at least we can call it HBO Max, like in the almost good old days. Second, with the announcement by President Bleep, we are complying with his directive to now refer to the Gulf of Persia as the Gulf of Arabia. Again, change is good, and instability in the nomenclature is to be celebrated. Besides, Persia doesn't exist anymore, and calling it the Gulf of Iran will only raise questions about whether it's Iran, Iran, or Iran. Better to just say Gulf of Arabia, as the military has already been doing for several years. Third, yet another contribution by he whose name must not be spoken was the threat to rebrand Veterans Day as Victory in World War I Day. Since it didn't happen, we'll just move on. But the indescribably orange one did change Victory in Europe Day, VE Day, to Victory Day for World War II. What we love about this is that it forces the Red Hat people to choose between honoring their leader's wishes or honoring the historical truth that World War II didn't end until Japan surrendered several months after VE Day. Do they accept what their leader says, or do they hang on to a contrary and inconvenient historical fact? Naturally, we celebrate anything that untethers people and their language from the truth. As more official guidance is given, we will eagerly share it with all the other in present. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend!
Second, CNN's Jake Tapper, whose forthcoming book Original Sin, President Biden's Decline, Its Cover-Up, and His Disastrous Choice to Run Again, details the cognitive decline of the 46th President of the United States and the extensive efforts to hide the deterioration and shelter Corn Pop's best friend from public scrutiny. Of course, what makes this betrayal so painful is that Tapper himself was one of the key participants in the charade of ignoring President Backrub's faltering mental acuity. He, along with so many other members of the media, systematically ignored the questions raised by Biden's behavior, speech patterns, and physical mishaps, and actively gaslit the millions of Americans who saw these things with their own eyes. Trip up the stairs to Air Force One? It's just wind. Or slippery steps. Fall on a bicycle? How dare you criticize the elderly. Fail to recognize George Clooney at a fundraiser? It was probably just too dark to see. Perform abysmally in a presidential debate? Trust us, he's an intellectual wizard in private. Don't believe your lying eyes. They had all the answers, and the fib was holding. And that's what's so baffling about this. Why now? It's over. The lie worked. There was no need to admit the truth. It was a flawlessly executed propaganda campaign. And with the ear whisperer-in-chief gone forever from the public eye, the hard part was over. We could have retired the issue and let the critics say whatever they wanted without ever giving them the satisfaction of confirming the allegations. No, Jake Tapper, this was the story you should never have told. Republicans will hate you for participating in the cover-up. Democrats will hate you for failing to keep participating in it. This is a lose-lose for you, sir. And how can we count on you ever again to do our bidding, sell our narrative, and work to advance the cause of wokeism alongside your fellow CNN comrades? Terrible choice. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend!
Finally, our third remembrance is for the game of chess. This week, the government of Afghanistan announced a complete ban on playing chess because it is considered a means of gambling. And the Taliban will be performing a thorough evaluation to determine whether playing chess is compatible with Islamic law or not. Of course, Islam has a long-standing problem with chess, the earliest ruling against which took place in 655 AD when Islam was less than 50 years old. Catholicism also has banned chess until as recently as the 13th century. Now, obviously, whether the Taliban or the Catholics are against chess is not all that important for us. But this action by the rabble from Kabul has forced us to evaluate the game on our terms, and we've found it wanting. However, we were surprised the Taliban was against it for reasons that will become clear. Obviously, the thing the Taliban would hate the most about chess is that the most powerful piece on the board is a woman, the queen. We, of course, cherish that. Moreover, the king, by comparison, is a total wuss who can barely even defend himself. And the truth of this insult to men everywhere almost made us want to keep the game. However, at second glance, the game reveals itself, in fact, as full-blown tool of the patriarchy. The only piece on the board which matters is the king, a man. The very life of every other piece is completely subservient to the only goal of keeping the king alive, including the highly powerful queen whose only reason for existing is to protect him. This alone justifies canceling the game. But then we thought about the racial message of the game. White pieces battling black pieces to the death, a fitting model for a world in which race is the most important defining characteristic of both the participants and the playing surface. We figure the Taliban doesn't care much because neither black nor white really represents them, but nobody loves a good race war like we do. Obviously, both we and the Taliban find the Christian imagery of the pieces troubling. The king is always identified with a cross. The bishop is obviously a reminder of the power of Christendom. And even the knight, squirrely movement and all, is just an anachronistic memorial for that strangest of medieval traditions, chivalry. Perhaps the Taliban would have been more amenable if the king had a crescent moon, or if the bishops were imams, or if the knight were driving an Isuzu trooper. Then there's the peasant pawns dying for their wealthy overlords across a massive rich-poor gap. The gentrification of the first row versus the second row in chess is a potent symbolic picture of the class struggle between the proletariat and the bourgeoisie, which every society experiences until the Hegelian dialectic forces them to evolve into the perfect socialist utopia, as in not a feudal monarchy. We were actually surprised that the Taliban didn't embrace the game simply for being a visual jihad of one side against the other, waging a bloody war of sacrifice and dominion for the ultimate prize of paradise with 70 undefiled pieces. Think of how frequently in chess, the pieces suffer martyrdom for the holy war. Suicide pawns routinely rush into crowded spaces like S-vest-wearing martyrs with nothing more in mind than to sacrifice themselves for their king. We actually thought the Taliban might make this their national game. But apparently, there's not enough explosions for them. Plus, the queen doesn't wear a burqa, and I suppose we recognize that the Taliban doesn't want symbolic imagery violence games taking away from two actual national pastimes, throwing stones at infidels and preventing girls from learning how to read. But in the end, for us, it came down to a simple matter of metaphorical sexual oppression. Even though we like the idea that pieces identified pawn at birth might eventually undergo gender-affirming care and be promoted into the queens they believe themselves to be, this one representation of aspirational transgenderism was not enough to rescue chess from its hopelessly heteronormative nature. One man and one woman united in a common monogamous cause? This game might as well have been designed by the Heritage Foundation. Why can't there be two kings? Or two queens? Or three queens, two kings, a bishop, and a rook? That just sounds like an average Wednesday at P. Diddy's house. Even without the baby oil. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal, and go forth and transgress no more.